This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
Later on Building Bridges, Senator Bernie Sanders on the reappointment of Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke. But first,
transit workers take back union after bitter election. Now, that was not an accident that I played Take the A Train by Duke Ellington. Subway track inspector John Samuelson and the Take Back Our Union slate won the hotly contested TWU Local 100 election December 7th after a multi-year campaign of criticizing the administration of Roger Toussaint and acting president Curtis Tate.
Fundamental issues leveled against the prior administration were over union democracy and union docility. Among the new leadership's priorities are getting the MTA to honor an arbitration award granting union members 11% raises under a three-year contract and fighting cutbacks due to the reduced revenue to the MTA.
We're joined by John Samuelson, President-elect TWU Local 100, Israel Rivera, Secretary-Treasurer-elect Benita Johnson, Recording Secretary-elect, and Angel Gibellion, who is Administrative Vice President-elect. And I feel like we should all crack out a bottle of champagne. On the other hand, though, while we celebrate, goodness, do you folks have your work cut out for you? Just this morning, first thing I did is I turned on the radio, and there was the MTA complaining, and what were they complaining about? Aha! The court award of back monies to the transportation workers. So why don't we just begin by that issue, and there's so many more things that we have to cover. And again, congratulations.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you
for having us here. You know, the issue of the raises is baffling to transit workers. Transit workers in general are used to having the utmost disrespect heaped upon us by everybody, and it continues with this contract arbitration issue. We are not set to get raises that even match the citywide pattern that was established by Bloomberg. The arbitration award falls short of the established citywide pattern. The arbitrator, in his award, staggered our raises, the 4% annual raises. He staggered them into 2% raises in order to save the MTA money. And still this wasn't good enough for the MTA. They're set to pay us less than what the citywide pattern is, yet they still want to withhold the money. Our position now is that the MTA should give it up. They had their day in court. The raises are lawfully ours, and they should stop wasting the taxpayers' money if they're as strapped as they claim they are.
John, just give us a little background on that issue, since not everybody may be versed on why there was the delay in the wage package to begin with and so on.
Okay, the contract expired on January 15th, 2009, nearly a year ago. Instead of striking like we did in 2005, the leadership of the union chose to go to binding arbitration. That's what the Taylor Law provides for. The union abided by the law, went to binding arbitration, and the arbitrator came down with a settlement which roughly reflected the citywide pattern that was established, except for the couple of issues that I raised earlier with the staggering of the wage increases.
And what are we talking about money-wise?
Around 11% over 3 years.
And I'm sure that the city's got, the TA has got to figure they got to pay something, so it's not 11% that they're really talking about. They had to have some money squirreled away to pay raises because everybody else has gotten raises. But the first thing people think about when there's, and quote, economic crisis is take it away from the workers.
Absolutely.
That's the pattern. Somebody just chime in on that. And also, what else needs to be done? What else do we have to think about in terms of these budget shortfalls? Let's get a discussion going here.
The one thing that we've discussed as a group in terms of leadership is the importance of making sure that our membership understands it's not personal. It's politics and business as usual. And that's one thing that the membership as a whole has been denied access to for a very long time. Basic groundwork to understand what the real fight is and what's really at stake. It's taken us a long time to get to a point where we could invite the writing public to understand our woes. And to be totally frank with you, we're willing to work with every strap hanger, school, church out there, because this is, to be totally frank with you, this problem is one circle. It's interconnected.
Well, what is the problem, Benita?
For the Transit Authority to claim that now it needs to attack the school children and those riders that need paratransit in order for there to be a balanced budget, and then point the fingers and say that it's because of labor that this has to be done, is atrocious. Again, I use the term smoke and mirrors because that's exactly what it is. It's fascinating. Corporations and multinationals get buyouts and bailouts and help outs, and those individuals that keep this city moving, those individuals that make this country what it is, which is us, everyday folk, those of us in the offices, those of us in transportation, those people get no assistance. Instead, the smoke fills the room and people start pointing fingers at each other. And we all know who's filling that room with smoke. So for the four of us, our collective energies are going to be used tenaciously to get our members involved with every organization possible so that we recognize those cuts that they want to make. Let me tell you something. Transit workers have families. Transit workers don't just move the city. We have relatives and friends and loved ones who utilize those same services. When you cut service on any level, it affects us all. It hurts us all. We are one family in this struggle.
What's a poor MTA to do? They say they've got a shortfall. So how do you respond to them? And we had opened by saying there was a certain level of docility with the Tate and Toussaint administration. What's going to be the difference now? We are in an economic, quote-unquote, crisis, or at least the working class is in an economic crisis, as the banks seem to be recovering. What do you say to the MTA? What's the strategy?
I think the first thing that you say to the MTA is that you don't solve the budget crisis on the backs of riders, school children, or New York City transit workers. You solve your own budget crisis by cutting your bloated bureaucracy. We can point to several projects, several construction projects right now. The Sonnet system is one, the automated train operation project, which is in place on the Canarsie line right now on the L line. Both of these projects are hundreds of millions of dollars over budget. Hundreds of millions of dollars. These two projects are just the tip of the iceberg. There's plenty of money for the MTA to save if they look at themselves. Not at school children, like Benita said, not at riders, and certainly not at New York City transit workers.
As well as senior citizens, too, because they plan on cutting a route on the BX-14.
The BX-14, yes, the BX-14 up in the Bronx. And there's a community up in the North Bronx by the Throgs Neck Bridge. You know, it's not just the riding public. We are the riding public. I have school children. My son goes to school near there, Maritime. Our families, our children use the same system, you know, every day. So we are the citizens of New York. So those cuts affect us in many ways.
I keep on thinking about the banks. I think Mimi mentioned the banks before, and I think of the profits they're making this year. And I can't see why we can't get some of that money for public services. I mean, I always keep on saying tax the rich, but now I'll say let's tax the banks. What do you think?
I agree. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Full agreement here.
Children out of it.
I think we're going to add Ken to the executive board, obviously. but let's be clear now. There is a new administration, and you really do have a hard row to hoe. So what are the priorities? Where do you go from here? What do you begin to usher in for your membership?
Well, I think the first thing we have to do is actually build a union where the members understand what a union is all about, basically so we could build our foundation. Because under the Roger administration, nobody believes in the union anymore. And we need to show them that we're different, we're a different leadership. And we plan to actually let them know that they're the union.
Well, wait a minute. Roger Toussaint was emerged as quite a hero at one point during the strike for tackling the bosses and saying, hey, look, we're not going to be riding in the back of our own buses, in effect. We believe in working class people. I mean, what changed?
You know, Roger Toussaint certainly didn't emerge as a hero among New York City transit workers or Local 100 members after that strike. If that was the perception of him on the outside, it certainly wasn't the perception of him within our union. And the evidence of that is that the contract that he brought back directly after the strike as a product of that strike was actually voted down by Local 100 members, only to have it several months later brought for a revote and ran back down New York City transit workers' throats. So there is no perception, and certainly hasn't been in a very long time, that Roger Toussaint or Edouard, for that matter, were heroes, let alone good for the union at all.
Edouard was the secretary treasurer, right?
Yeah, he was the number two man, and he was the partner of Roger Toussaint.
So what do you do to, concretely, what do you do day one, January 1st, to build up the confidence of the membership, the involvement of the membership in the union?
Well, I think over the last several years, the union has lost its understanding of what it's supposed to be doing. The union essentially, it has a lot of functions, but primarily in the field, the union emerges as the buffer between management and workers, and in our case, New York City transit workers. That mission has been completely lost by the leadership that we're about to replace. To combat that, we intend to create, for instance, right off the bat, one of the biggest shop steward programs in the history of our union, if not in the history of the New York City labor movement. And we intend to flood the system with layer upon layer of union reps to present themselves as a barrier, so to speak, between these New York City transit bosses who, by and large, are very aggressive, and transit workers themselves.
So union democracy, Israel, is exactly a critical issue?
It's a very critical issue. Right now, morale, I come from a division called MAPSTOA, a division where, for the most part, the membership is...
And that is the buses.
Yeah, buses, mm-hmm. Manhattan and Bronx Surface Transit, buses in the Bronx mm-hmm. and Manhattan. For the most part, the membership up there was afraid to speak up. They were afraid of democracy, you know, and that's what we want to bring up. We want them to speak up. You don't have to agree with us, you know, but you do have the right to speak. You have the right to voice your opinions and to bring them forward to us. And that's democracy. At the end of the day, you know, it ends at the end of the day. You have that right. It's not a privilege.
Well, you know, one of our platforms
was... And we're speaking with Angel now.
Yeah. One of our platforms while we were campaigning was that under our administration, no executive board will be on paid staff. And we are planning to do that as soon as we get in office.
And why is that important?
Well, it's important because being on paid staff, what happens with an executive board member is that he's afraid to vote against the president because the president is basically his boss and pays him his salary. And if he doesn't vote the way the president wants, the president will wind up sending him back to driving a bus or driving a train. So if he's not on paid staff, he's not afraid to express his own opinion on which way to vote.
It's important to us that the membership understands that the platform wasn't rhetoric. When we say a rank-and-file run union, we're talking about implanting the type of education across the board in all 47 of our departments, all 7 of our departments, in 47 subsections, so that the membership recognizes their true power and that they hold us accountable, and that we in turn say to them, this is something that can only be done with the vested interest of all of us. When I spoke to you earlier about the transit workers getting involved with all of the groups, the schools, the churches, all of the groups in the city of New York, with regards to those things that we as a union know are unsafe, not just for the worker, but unsafe for the riding public, that's going to require a lot of footwork. And in order for our membership to understand that they're foot soldiers in this war, we got to be out there in the field, willing to make sure that they understand that collectively, this is how we get things done. So we're not the talking that was done during the campaigning. For us, it's not just talking. We're almost like fanatics or zealots about this process. We want to see labor that is actually doing what labor has promised it would do from many years back to now, where the rank and file, the actual worker, is the voice, is the power, and we are simply the mouthpiece. Not unions run from the top down, but brothers and sisters from the bottom up, making things turn the way they should. That's what Take Back Our Union campaigned on. That's what the four of us believe in staunchly, vehemently, and that's what we're going to spend the next 3 years doing.
By God, I think you got our vote.
We can't vote in that union.
Oh, darn.
Either. That would be undemocratic. But maybe I'll become a bus driver. I hear it was always Ralph Crand, but anyway. Another question people may have, and I may have, is that as a part of the punishment of the union for the last strike, you still are without dues checkoff. And as I understand it, a large number, perhaps even half of the members are not paying dues. And what's the strategy of that to get people to voluntarily pay dues when it's not being taken involuntarily from their paycheck.
And maybe you can explain what that, the significance, since not everybody knows what it means to have a dues checkoff. So, John?
Well, the dues checkoff is part and parcel with the New York State Tailor Law, and it allows the transit authority to take dues, or it actually commands the transit authority to take dues out of Local 100 members' paycheck and deliver it to the union. After the strike in 2005, a consequence of the Tailor Law penalties was the loss of this checkoff. The situation it left the union in was having to scramble to get Local 100 members to voluntarily pay dues. And, you know, there's a couple of problems that the union immediately faced. One of them is the contract that was returned after the strike gave us first-time ever health benefit payments of 1.5%. And the 1.5% is a big problem for transit workers. And faced with the Tailor Law fines and faced with the payment of the 1.5%, a lot of Local 100 members made the bad choice of not continuing to support the union by paying dues. I believe that the departure of Watt and Tucson unto itself is going to spark a fair amount of transit workers to begin paying dues again voluntarily. By the way, the checkoff is restored, so when we talk about paying dues again, we're talking about Local 100 members paying the arrears that they owe from the point of time before the state restored the checkoff.
And that's what enables the union to function.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. We don't have precise records because we're not in the door yet. We don't take power until January 1st. But it's somewhere, it's roughly half the membership is not paying dues right now. And we certainly have to embark on a plan, on a solid plan to begin to give transit workers a reason, Local 100 members a reason to pay dues once again.
I just want to do a quick go around and get a sense of your lives in MAPSTOA and transit. How long have you worked and what have you done in transit?
I'm 17 years and I'm a track inspector by trade. I work in the subway in Brooklyn at night, or at least I did until a few days ago.
And a lot of health and safety issues, I dare say.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Israel?
I'm a bus operator, 19 years in MAPSTOA in the Bronx out of Kingsbridge Depot. Up until recently, I was driving the BX9 going to Van Cortlandt Park in the Bronx Zoo.
Even though I'm from Brooklyn, that is one of my favorite places. Angel?
I'm a bus driver for Liberty Lines Transit out of Westchester County, and I'm currently almost finishing my term for 3 years as an executive board member, so that's why I know for sure that they were on paid staff, but that's going to come to an end.
Benita?
Amen, brother.
I am a conductor by title. My work function is construction flagger. Been in the system for 24 years.
So you're Johnny-come-lately. So you folks don't have a lot of experience with transit.
Let me just say something quickly that I'm very exceptionally proud of, that this is the first ever leadership that rose directly out of the rank and file. Every single one of us worked our pick jobs up until the day that we won the election. Every single one of us.
So here's a pledge. Our station is at your disposal to really to come back and tell us about the things that you're instituting to democratize the union, to make sure the rank and file has the health and safety, the wage, and all the other things that they should have as a result of their incredible labor to make this city run.
And the public has their service, and you're going to be advocating for that also.
Maybe can I just add one thing?
Go ahead, Benita.
And we're really gracious and very thankful for everything you've offered us. Trust me, we can use all the help
we
can.
Well, we're thankful that you're going to stimulate a democratic, progressive labor front in this city, which benefits all of us. I'm in the UAW. And again, our wonderful guests are?
John Samuelson.
Israel Izzy Rivera.
Angel Gibbio.
Benita Johnson.
And the entire new leadership elect celebratory of TW Local 100. We expect great things. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Union. Yeah, well. Word up.
Scandalo.
Bomba.
Yo, yo, yo.
Yo, yo, yo. Yo, the sound came to be a continuity from the ashes of the old. This wisdom is gold, brothers and sisters. It's time to look around. If we don't come master, we'll be driven to the ground.
It's a new millennium, new piece of history. All the workers come together, it's time for unity. While the rich just get richer, the poor keep on giving. That's a sign of the times, reality's what we're living.
The media is deception, we get handed lies. But you can't cheat a worker, cause a worker is wise. Day after day, we have to keep it going. Year after year, the union keeps growing. Taking until millions that they never were to earn. But without a brain and muscle, not a single will could turn. Not a force on earth is weaker than the feeble strength of one. Solidarity forever, the union makes us strong. All working people, it's time to come together. A union makes us strong, solidarity forever. All working people, it's time to come together. A union makes us strong, solidarity forever. All working people, it's time to come together. A union makes us strong, solidarity forever.
Paula Bamba Gonzalez, Solidarity Forever. And now, Brave New Films presents Senator Bernie Sanders on Where Was the Fed?
So the very simple question that the American people are asking is, where was the Fed? Where was the chairman of the Fed in terms of observing the recklessness, the speculation, the casino-type activities that were taking place on Wall Street, which precipitated this major economic decline?
I absolutely will not vote for Mr. Bernanke. He is part of the problem. He is the smartest guy in the world. Why did he do anything to prevent us from sinking into this disaster that Wall Street caused and which he was a part of? No, I will not vote for Bernanke to stay on as chairman.
I've recently put a hold on the renomination of Ben Bernanke as chairman of the Fed, and I'm going to do everything that I can to see that he is not reappointed. Now, why am I doing that? I'm doing that because this country today is in the midst of the worst economic crisis we have been in since the Great Depression. 17% of our people are unemployed or underemployed. One out of four kids in this country is on food stamps. Millions of people have lost their homes. The gap between very rich and everybody else is going wider. Now, while the trend of a collapsing middle class has taken place for many, many years, obviously, this recession was precipitated by the greed, recklessness, and illegal behavior on Wall Street a little over a year ago. Now, one of the key responsibilities of the Fed is to maintain the safety and soundness of our financial institutions. That's what their job is. That's why they have almost 3,000 bank supervisors. So the very simple question that the American people are asking is, where was the Fed? Where was the chairman of the Fed in terms of observing the recklessness, the speculation, the casino-type activities that were taking place on Wall Street, which precipitated this major economic decline? And the answer is, the Fed was asleep at the wheel. Bernanke did not do the job that he was supposed to have done. So for that reason alone, Mr. Bernanke should not be reappointed. But then we have to ask, what did he do after the financial collapse? Was he paying attention to the middle class and working families of this country, or was he primarily preoccupied with the well-being of large financial institutions on Wall Street? I think the record is pretty clear that his worry was not the economy, was not creating decent paying jobs, or protecting consumers. Now, one of the responsibilities that the Fed has is to protect consumers. The chairman of the Fed could have said to the bailed out financial institutions, you know what? You're not going to charge working Americans 25 or 30% interest rates on their credit card. We're going to put a cap on what you can charge, perhaps at 15%, which is what credit unions get. He could have done that. The chairman of Fed could have said to bailed out financial institutions, you know what? You're not going to be paying out huge compensation packages to the CEOs, but what you are going to be doing is providing low interest loans to small and medium-sized businesses who today are starving for that credit so they can go out and create the jobs that our economy desperately needs. Now, since the bailout, which was brought about, as you know, because institutions were, quote unquote, too big to fail. Well, you know what happened to these big institutions? They became bigger. Three out of the four largest banks in this country are bigger now than they were before the bailout. Well, that's pretty crazy to me. That means there's more systemic risk to our economy if these guys go under. The chairman of the Fed should be doing what they're doing in the United Kingdom, what many economists are calling for right now, and that is if an institution is too big to fail, it's too big to exist, let's start breaking them up. And lastly, what this chairman, Mr. Bernanke, is not doing is providing the kind of transparency that the American people want regarding this very, very powerful institution called the Fed. When Bernanke came before my committee, and I'm on the budget committee, and I said, Mr. Bernanke, you have lent out trillions of dollars in zero interest loans to some of the largest financial institutions in America. Can you please tell me the names of those institutions and what the terms and agreements were? And Mr. Bernanke said, no, not going to tell you. Well, I happen to think the American people are entitled to have that information, and Bernanke is not giving it to us. So we need a new chairman, somebody who is going to pay attention to small and medium-sized business, somebody who is going to do everything that he or she can to grow our economy, create decent-paying jobs, somebody who's going to protect consumers against outrageously high interest rates on their credit cards, and somebody who is going to stand up for ordinary people. So I'm going to do my best to see that Mr. Bernanke is defeated, and I hope in that process I can have the support of millions of people throughout this country. Thanks very much.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our new website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.